Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Dear friends, there are so many heroes in the field of afterlife research. I know many of them. I'm thrilled to know them. These people labor for their lives to assemble for you and me the information that mainstream scientists still refuse even to look at. And we're going to talk about that a bit today. But these heroes work for us, for you and me, so that someday the essential truth that our lives really are eternal would be impossible for anybody to deny. Thanks to them, you and I are at last beginning to make sense of our one reality, and soon we are going to rock the world. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and our guest today is I think, the foremost hero in this whole field, Michael Timm. Mike is the world's leading afterlife researcher, and he's a mild and gentle man. He won't ever toot his own horn, so I've got to do it for him. Welcome, Mike. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Roberta. I appreciate it. But I would say that I'm not really a researcher. I consider myself a reporter more than anything else. I'm not doing any direct research.
Well, I've read your book, and I couldn't tell that you weren't doing serious research, because a lot of what I've learned actually has come either from you directly or from the same sources you've used. And I know it takes work to pull them together and to even think about the ways in which to kind of pull it together so people will understand it. So reporting or researching, whatever you're doing, you're the best at it.
Well, thank you.
Now, the latest book that Mike has published is called Dead Men Talking. I love that title. And this is about the doughboys, the fellows who fought in World War I, and many of them died. So it's communications from young people who, during a period of extraordinary, sort of a burst of communications happening at that time through deep transmediums, primarily, I think. You can correct me anytime, Mike. But during that time, these people who had just died were really telling us, I thought, some wonderful things, some scientific things, which people who were careful researchers could put together and make much more sense of what actually was going on. I loved their communications, and Dead Men Talking is a compendium of some of the best ones, so I really, really recommend the book. Why did you write this book, Mike?
Well, one of my favorite all-time books is Raymond, or Life and Death by Sir Oliver Lodge. And I knew that the 100th anniversary of World War I was coming up at the time, and I suggested to my publisher, the White Crow Books, who had published five of my previous books, that they do an abridgment of Sir Oliver's book. His book is about 400 pages long, and like so many of the old time authors, he got a bit long winded at times, and I thought,
yes.
I could reduce the book down to about 200 pages. So it wasn't really a writing project as much as it was just abridging the book. But my John Beecher, who heads up White Crow Books, he thought it was a good idea, but he says, why not take all the books, or a number of the books from that era of deceased soldiers communicating, and put them all together in an abridged anthology of sorts. So I said, okay, and that's what it is. It's actually five books that came out of World War I from soldiers communicating with their deceased loved ones through mediums and what they had to say. So I wrote the introduction, the preface and the introduction, and I have a lot of commentary in the chapters themselves. But for the most part, the material is taken from the books themselves, and there, as I said, five of them. In addition to Raymond or Life and Death, there's Thy Son Liveth, which actually was made into a movie in 2002. It's called A Rumor of Angels. And then there's Claude's book, which is the experiences of of Claude Kelway Bamber, who was a British pilot that communicated through Gladys Osborne Leonard, one of the most famous mediums of that era.
Yes, my favorite.
And there's Private Dowding, who came through a medium named Wellesley Tudor Pole via automatic writing. And then there's Rolfe's Life in the Spirit World, which is the story of Rolfe Little, as also communicated through Gladys Osborne Leonard. So that's what the book is. It's an anthology of those five books.
But what's great about it is that, as books really need to be nowadays for enjoyable reading, it's not very long. I mean, this is a book that you can read in a couple of evenings if you have the time, and or bring it along and read bits from it at lunch or whatever you want to do. It's a very easily read book. It's amazing the energy that comes from these really young people who died and who are anxious to talk to their families, anxious to let people know that they've survived. It really comes through. I mean, I'm amazed you were able to boil it down to such a brief book, but you really got rid of all the extra stuff and you made it just the good parts. And that makes it a wonderful book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And as I mentioned to you earlier, there's not a lot of evidential material in four of the books. The evidence comes from the consistency of what they're all saying. In Sir Oliver Lodge's book, there is quite a bit of evidence that Raymond was communicating, but that's not the point. The purpose of the book was to get these ideas through that were being communicated, telling us what the other life is like.
Yes. Yeah. Tell us a little about Sir Oliver Lodge, who was a very prominent... Was he a scientist? I can't recall now what he did, but he was very prominent, and he really sort of risked his reputation when he lost his son in the war to show that his son hadn't been lost after all.
Right. He was a physicist. He taught physics at Birmingham University, and he's also an inventor. He is said to have discovered the wireless before Marconi, but he was so involved in other projects, including psychical research, that he didn't get the patent in on time.
Wow.
And so Marconi got all the credit for the wireless, but it's fairly well recorded that Lodge got to it before Marconi. There was a third person involved whose name I can't think of right now, but Lodge is one of the three anyway that developed the wireless.
Wow.
He also developed the spark plug. I'm not sure if it's the original spark plug or some modification of the original spark plug, but that was one of his inventions. And he was quite well known. He was a world-renowned physicist at the time. And he became interested in psychical research in 1884, I think it was, and had a number of sittings with Leonora Piper when she made her trip to England in 1889 and 1890, and that pretty well convinced him that there was something to mediumship, and that he then became a believer in life after death, or at least was leaning in that direction. But it wasn't until around 1909 that he really came out and expressed his beliefs, much to the
yes.
his peers didn't appreciate his announcing that he did believe in life after death, because at that time, this was in the wake of Darwinism. Science had
right.
thought they had put away all these ideas. They were
right.
all superstition. They were all folly. I mean, and they saw this as a return to religion. So Sir Oliver had to deal with his peers in the scientific community, but he didn't back down at all. And then his youngest son, was killed in World War I, he wrote the book that I mentioned, Raymond, or Life and Death, and a lot of people said, well, Sir Oliver believes only because, you know, he has a will to believe because his son has died. But the fact is, he was involved in this research 20
right.
years before Raymond died, and had already come out and written two books on the subject before Raymond.
Even today, among scientists who won a reputation that's good in the scientific world, this is the interest that dare not speak its name. It's really, people have to be closeted if they're going. And so he was very courageous to come out and say, look, this is the cutting edge, and everybody's ignoring it. But to me, that's a remarkable story. And his book written about his son is just wonderful. So that's the fact that you've used that as sort of the spine and added all the others makes this book terrific. So again, Dead Men Talking, great title. That's a great way. This book is a great way to get an introduction to Michael Timm, and it's TYMN, to his work. But he has so many books that he's written that all of them are wonderful. I've read many of them, and I just can't recommend them highly enough. I want to go back to something you just said, though, and I don't want to let it go because, to me, it's very important. You said that the evidence that we are relying on in looking at what all these kids, these young people, said during the First World War after they had died lies not so much in that each of them was able to talk about what he did at his last birthday party or whatever people think of as evidential, but it lies in the fact that they're all telling the same story. Please elaborate on that, because I think that's absolutely correct. I think you've nailed why this is such an important area of research.
Well, I think that the biggest thing that comes out of the whole spiritualism era from 1850 to 1930 or thereabout, and it came from these soldiers, is that the afterlife is not this humdrum heaven, a horrific hell that religion has made it out to be, that there are many levels, right, many planes, many spheres, whatever you want to call them on the other side, and that we go to a level that we've prepared ourselves for. I like the term Professor Robert Hare gave to it. Hare was a chemist who was one of the early psychical researchers back during the 1850s, and he called it a moral specific gravity.
Yes.
And that's what all these all these messages, including the five from the soldiers in my book, had to say is that, you know, you end up in a place that you prepared yourself for, and none of them were very high. They all seemed to be around what is called the third sphere or
yes,
Summerland.
Level three, right. This is the most important thing for anybody listening to this series of broadcasts to know. We are coming to understand that the way we live in life, and specifically the ways that we have worked to raise our spiritual vibration, our spiritual health or awareness, really, as Mike just said, makes a huge difference in where we're going to end up. This isn't something you can pray for. It's nothing that any church can give you an entree to. It's the work you do here to raise your spiritual vibration that's going to make such a difference. And that comes not just from the evidence, but it's the same exact thing that Jesus told us 2,000 years ago that the church, frankly, doesn't emphasize. But very, very important. And as you point out, it's not just these young men, but there are so many communications that came during that time. It's almost as if the floodgates opened, and teams of the dead, teams of researchers, were really trying to make us, teams of dead researchers, were trying to come up with ways to prove that they had survived. And they were just stonewalled by traditional scientists. Tragic.
Definitely, and you know, it's been stressed and emphasized in many books, many afterlife, after-death communications since then, but nobody seems, I mean, for some reason, the churches don't want to grasp it.
No.
It's still, you're going to hell or you're going to heaven.
Right.
There's no in-between. I just don't get why it doesn't make sense to the church.
Well, especially since we now can document that just about all the major things that the dead have been telling us that we've been working for the past 100-plus years to assemble, and there have been a lot of researchers, as you know, working in this field in different ways and coming to the same conclusions about a lot of things. And then if we go back and read the Gospels, we find that Jesus said it all. 2,000 years ago. So basically, they've got the winning horse in their stable, but they refuse to let it go out there and run. It's so amazing to me that that's still the case. Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think that they don't say, wow, hey, yeah, Jesus do stuff. He was right. Amazing. But why?
Yeah, well, I think they stick on certain dogma and doctrine, and if they see something that deviates from that dogma or doctrine, then they think it's, you know, comes from the devil or whatever. And there are enlightened people in the church who seem to accept this, but they don't want to go against the authorities of the church, and so they just keep quiet. I have a couple of friends that one a priest and one a minister who think there's something to it, but they won't discuss it with their parishioners or with the authorities in the church because of fear, I guess.
That's where their careers are, and they probably would wreck their careers if they tried to talk about it.
Right.
It's tragic because it is, in fact, the case that the only 2,000-year-old witness that we have that's perfectly consistent with what the dead are telling us, starting in the, as you point out, in the mid-1800s, going right to now, the only consistent witness we have is Jesus. And there's no question that his communications are real because they've been in continuous custody of the Catholic Church for almost 2,000 years. So nobody could put stuff in there. And yet he talks about all the same stuff that the dead are telling us now. This
right.
should be huge front page news. And yet, it's, you know, as you point out, it's just dogmas are more important at this point to religious people than is the truth that Jesus taught. Amazingly and strange.
Right. And Jesus said,
in
my house there are many mansions.
That's
you know,
right.
The word mansions, I mean, it can be interpreted in different ways. As it came from the original Hebrew, I guess, it can be translated to abodes or levels or whatever. Unfortunately, mansions is not really a good translation, I don't think, but that's the one that stuck.
Right. Yeah, I've seen rooms as well. But it doesn't almost matter how it's put. That whole passage in the Gospels, I'm going to prepare a place for you and I'll come and get you and take you where I am. That's exactly what our loved ones do for us. The husband, when he dies, usually a husband dies first, he makes a house there for his wife, which hopefully recreates their house here, although there are some funny stories from the first part of the 20th century, wives complaining through the medium that he built it, but he built it wrong. It was reversed. There was one woman who said, throughout our whole marriage, he wanted to build this hideous addition on the house. It would have ruined the house. I got here, and the addition was on the house. She was really fuming. So they're building homes there, and that's exactly what he says he's going to do, and then he'll come and get them. I'm so struck over and over again when I read the Gospels with all the things he said that we now know what he meant because we have the afterlife evidence as corroboration. So, all right, you and I and everyone else who really wants to know the truth is stuck between a rock and another rock. We've got religions, primarily I think we're talking about Christianity, although I think the others are about in the same boat, but Christianity is the one we're sort of focused on, that are basically stuck in the first century. It's nothing that was done later than the year, probably, what, 150 was then when they finished writing the books of the Bible. That's it. I mean, close the book. Nothing else can be learned. So that's where religions are, and the dogmas get built then on this ancient stuff that's based in Judaism and Jewish practices. That's what Christianity is, frankly. So we've got that as a problem, and then we've got this other problem with science. Why will scientists not look at this overwhelming and consistent evidence, Michael? Why?
Well, just one point before we go to science. Let me go back to religion and point out that, much of the resistance by religion has to do with the Old Testament, where it says that we should not listen to the dead, and the dead know nothing, and there are three or four other statements along that line that indict the dead. But my understanding is that the original Hebrew word for dead that this was taken from referred to the spiritually dead. In other words, low-level spirits or earthbound spirits who knew nothing. These earthbound spirits knew nothing. But it just came out dead. So religion has focused on this word dead instead of saying the spiritually dead, or that, you know, the low-level spirit. Don't listen to the low-level spirits. They know nothing. And, you know, we go to the New Testament.
They don't, in fact, know anything. Yeah. But that doesn't mean upper-level spirits can't tell us things.
And then, you know, we go to the New Testament, and we're told to test the spirits, whether they are of God. So how can you test them if they don't listen to them or they know nothing? And then elsewhere we're told to discern the messages. So why should we bother to discern if they know nothing?
Or if we're not allowed to listen to them for one reason or another. But you're right. This has certainly been, for Christianity, a handy way to sort of cudgel down any evidence that they don't want to consult. They can just say it's of the devil.
Right.
Of course, those of us who've done afterlife research know that we've never found any evidence that it's possible for there to be a powerful evil entity. Not only have we not found that evil entity, but we haven't. It appears from the physics of the afterlife that it's not possible for there to be a powerful evil entity because of the fact that the higher the vibratory rate of any being, and that's positive energy, love. The higher the vibratory rate, the more powerful it is. The more evil an entity is, the weaker it is in every way. So, I mean, I try to tell people this. They say, aren't you doing what's up with the devil? And I say, well, no, because the devil doesn't have any power. The devil can't even do anything. There is no devil. Anyway, that's a soapbox thing that bothers me because you're right. It's just an easy way to enforce ignorance. And it's been enforced for 2,000 years. It's time to open the windows and understand that the Lord told us 2,000 years ago things we can only confirm now. That's great validation for the historical Jesus and for the fact that he was what he claimed to be. Why isn't that good news? It should be good news. Anyway.
I agree. I don't know. I don't get it. I just don't understand the resistance. I have a good friend who's a lawyer and has... might very well be a judge in the next year or two, and he's a born-again Christian, and he keeps warning me about my demonic beliefs. And I wonder, if this person is a judge, and he follows that line of reasoning, are we in trouble? Or, how can a person who that way be a judge?
That's right. I agree with you. But he's still your friend. I admire you for that. Yeah, I have friends too who think that I'm a little strange, but that's all right. At this point, we take our friends where we can find them.
Right.
The more love we spread, the better.
Right.
So let's go on and talk about science then, because this is an odd position you and I are in, and I had been thinking about doing a podcast just talking about this. The fact that there is a whole group of people who have dared to study what's in the valley between mainstream science and mainstream Christianity, and we have found a bounty of evidence and information that would so improve what both hills are doing. I mean, science is as off the rails as Christianity is at this point because they're so adamantly against studying this stuff. So why do you think it's still going on 100 years after we started getting wonderful evidence that they started to stonewall? Why?
Well, as I mentioned before, it all seems to have started during the 19th century, even before Darwinism, Thomas Paine, and the Age of Enlightenment, the Age of Reason, and so forth. People were falling away from religion and becoming atheists. And when all this... psychical research started taking place, after 1850. They couldn't distinguish the difference between, what was coming out of psychical research and what religion was teaching. It was all had to do with the afterlife, not necessarily a belief in God. Spiritualism didn't really focus on God. I mean, the idea was that consciousness survives death. I mean, if you want to infer a God from that, fine, but that was the main thing. And I think that's the main mistake that organized religion makes today. They think you have to identify God before you can even discuss the survival of consciousness after death. So they never get around to fully identifying God in a satisfactory manner for the skeptics or the scientists or whoever, and so they don't get beyond that point. The survival evidence just doesn't hit home with the scientists, because they think they have to find God before they get to the survival evidence. And, you know, there's ego, fear, upsetting the apple cart, you know, their whole worldview goes down the drain, and they just continue to resist it for that reason. Looking for absolute, you know, as I mentioned in my latest blog, the evidence for biological evolution is pretty strong, but I don't think it's absolute. As long as there's that missing link, there's still some doubt. I'd say the evidence for evolution is 98.8% in favor of evolution, but I think it's not 98.8% in favor of survival as well. But science considers evolution as a given fact, but they still doubt the evidence for survival. I don't get it.
Yeah, it that's a wonderful point. Sure, evolution happens. That's the way God does it. I mean, it's only inconsistent if you believe that the Old Testament is, for Christians, the inspired Word of God. Jesus says right in the Gospels, and I'll be talking about this on another podcast, to throw away the Old Testament. He says it there, they ignore it. The universe was not created in 6 days, and let's be rational in the 21st century. We don't have to be afraid to be rational, because in fact the truth is the truth. Our lives are eternal, Jesus is real, and all is good in the world. So we can dare to come out from under this blanket of Christian beliefs that are so antiquated that they just make no sense. And the churches are dying of old age. That's really all they're dying of, but they are dying. I think it's important to stop and sort of pause and wonder about the foolishness of these institutions that we trust, and the fact that both of them are really kind of falling apart. But we're not going to change it, I don't think, until we have very good communication. And there are people now working on excellent electronic communication. As you know, from Sonia Rinaldi was at last year's Afterlife Conference of the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies, and she had wonderful electronic communications pictures of dead people talking to their loved ones in real time. It was a wonderful thing. That has advanced to the point, I don't know if you know this, she's using cell phones now. I mean, it won't be long before they have established a very effective Brazilian station, but unfortunately it's in Portuguese. So there are people now working on an English-speaking station in the United States, and work is going near apace. They believe it will be another year or two before we have a workable cell phone. It'll be in beta still for a while. But when the day comes that people can talk to their dead in real time, both Christianity and mainstream science will be thrown on their ear. Imagine that.
Yeah, but the question is, will they really accept it? And, you know, I often wonder, you know, do we really want absolute evidence of an afterlife? Will that take away the challenges? Will that change the worldview of people? I don't know. I mean, that's a big question.
That's a very interesting question. This is what I think it will do. I think it'll do two things. Number one, and this is just based on the people you and I know who already know the truth. I think first we'll realize that we're living on an eternal stage. Yes, you're going to survive your death just fine, which means that you're not going to get away with the same stuff in this lifetime. You might think you could if you're going to just sort of die and the evidence goes away. So I think people behave better, become kinder just anyway when they come to understand this. But I think even more importantly, we'll come to understand what the purpose is of life. I mean, Jesus told us 2,000 years ago and was ignored. But the dead tell us, too, we're here to learn to grow spiritually. As you point out, a lot of people that in the early part of the 20th century who died were entering at the lowest Summerland level, not necessarily getting A-pluses in the way that they lived their lives. But hopefully, when we understand why we're here, more people will take it more seriously, don't you think?
I agree.
I don't know. We'll see. Now, what about the media? I mean, don't you think they're enablers of all of this? I mean, look at Wikipedia, which refuses to basically tell the truth about anything going on in this field. Doesn't that frustrate you?
Yeah, definitely. That's very frustrating. I mean, you can't get any information from Wikipedia that's anywhere close to truth. I could cite dozens of write-ups by Wikipedia on various mediums and psychical researchers where they just state something as fact that is clearly not fact. They don't give the other
right.
side, you know, and... there's even... I don't know how Rational Wiki is... connected with Wikipedia. I think they're somehow related, but anyway, there's even an entry on me that calls me a pseudoscientist and a spiritualist and
right.
sets forth all kinds of false information that nobody bothered to check with me to find out whether it's true or not, or they just state these facts as facts, and they're not.
Yet, have you tried to correct any of that?
Yeah, I tried to correct it. They won't allow me to correct it. That there are ways that you can correct some of those Wikipedia entries, but that then they're re-edited back to, you know, the original version. I don't know what it is about or how they do it, but they have a lot of pseudo-skeptics that are controlling the Wikipedia entries.
Right. The problem is, and I guess I feel bad for people, if it's becoming more and more clear that you're on the wrong side, you tend to double down. And what they're doing is supporting scientists. I love reading Scientific American. It's my favorite magazine, because in every single issue you see more and more sort of desperation and hopelessness on the part of mainstream scientists. Because the world is falling apart around them. They won't say this, of course, but when they think they're talking among themselves, and often they don't even realize what they're saying, and how damning it is of their worldview. I mean, there was last summer someone was talking about the fact that they had just discovered that 80% of the light in the nearby universe has no source. Someone said it's like going into a warehouse and it's full of light, but there are no windows. When you see two 60-watt bulbs, where is the rest of the light coming from? Well, that's an important question, and the answer seems to me to be related to the 68% of the universe that they say is, that's more than two-thirds, that they say is dark energy. Dark energy,
mm-hmm.
dark only because it doesn't interact with photons. Why
right.
aren't they putting all of this together?
I don't know.
But that's the ultimate problem that Wikipedia has, I think. They're trying to protect their friends, and their friends can't stand on their own feet. Everyone who has tried to, quote, debunk or to give a rational explanation for these phenomena has been unable to do it. For 15 years, our wonderful friend Victor Zammit and Wendy Zammit, whose newsletter, I always give them a plug, go to victorzammit.com and subscribe to their newsletter. It comes out on Thursday in the United States, on Friday in Australia, and it's free, and it's full of wonderful information, which you really can't get anywhere else, about all the different areas of this. Recently, they did a whole newsletter on aliens. There's a lot of information about aliens we sort of come across naturally in doing afterlife research. But the Zamets for the past 15 years have had a million-dollar challenge. Unlike the million-dollar challenge that was posted by the person we will not name in Florida some years back, this is real. The money is on deposit. And all you have to do is prove that there are rational explanations or we just had fakery with regard to each of their kinds of evidence of the afterlife in their book. Of course, the book is called A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. And it's a bestseller on Amazon. I think it is almost 5 stars, which is rare when you've got many, many reviews. But this is the kind of information that people have been hungry for. We all are aware of bits and pieces of the afterlife information, but to pull it all together and give us all of the options for looking more closely at what is really going on is what the Zamets do best. So what they've done, I think, is really remarkable. And I don't understand why anyone is not taking them up on the challenge. If, in fact, those who are so sure the afterlife is not real are confident of their own position, then, there's $1 million waiting for them, and that's a lot of zeros. You would think more people would be attempting to disprove it, which, Mike, this kind of proves my theory that they already know, the scientists know that this is all real, but they're not doing anything about it because they want their careers to be over without their having to deal with it. Don't you think that's what's really going on?
I agree. I happen to be watching a TV program, Mysteries at the Museum. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's on the Travel Channel segment on...
No, I tend not to watch TV anymore. I find it too depressing.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm guilty of watching it now and then. But they had a segment on about the James Randi Foundation the other night, and how James Randi proved that spoon bending is just so much bunk. I don't recall all the details, but he had a couple of people go in to be tested. They were on his side, and they made out like they bent the spoons, and so the parapsychologist who was conducting the test announced that he had succeeded in bending spoons by one's mind. And, it was sort of big news in the parapsychological field. But then Randi announced that these guys were working for him, and they faked bending them. They just bent them with their thumbs or something to that effect. I didn't get the whole point of what they did. But I attended a spiritualist conference about 10 years ago in San Francisco, and they had a spoon bending session in which there are about 200 people there, and I can't think of the name of the medium offhand, but she gave instructions that spoons and forks were passed out to everyone, including myself and my wife, and instructions were given to focus on, mentally on bending the spoon and so forth. After about 3 minutes, 80% of the people in the audience, their spoons had curled up, including my wife's. Mine didn't.
I don't even believe in it myself. You're telling me it works? That's amazing.
Yeah, in fact, I've got the spoon is right on the shelf next to me as I sit here. And it's not a bend. I mean, this is a curl. It just curled around. And it sort of did it... sort of curled when you don't even see it happen. You just look at, 1 minute the spoon is straight and the next minute it was curled up. But the one that was really amazing was the woman next to us. She had a fork, and the four prongs on the fork curled into tight knots.
Really? And this is all done with the power of your mind?
Right.
I think that's amazing, but I'm not surprised in that we understand our minds are able to affect matter. They're much more powerful than we realize. And Jesus said this. He said, if you believe you can make a mountain go jump into the ocean, it'll do it for you. And so if you believe you can bend a spoon, the little tines will curl up. Wow.
Right.
That's really fascinating. Well,
I'm not sure what that has to do with life after death. I mean, it just
it's
what it
nothing.
Does is just proves that the mind over matter and
right. Here's a tie-in. The Amazing Randy is the one who had the million-dollar challenge for mediums. And when people tried to take him up on it, suddenly it wasn't there anymore. I think that's fascinating. You know, it was a bluff, apparently. And I'm not directly involved with any of the people who did this, but that's the story that I've heard in several different places. Unlike his challenge for mediums, there is a challenge for skeptics. Again, the Zamets have the money on deposit. It's rates waiting to be claimed by anybody who can prove that all of this is not real. So good luck to them. It's hard to prove that something is not real, which is real, but, you know, we'll let them have a try. It's certainly a worthy amount of money to get. Unfortunately, they will not be able to get it. But still, for 15 years, that money's been waiting. Fascinating about spoon bending. I'm going to have to look into that more. I never knew anything about that. Wow. Well, and it's humiliating when you're the one who's the afterlife expert, and it's your wife who manages to bend the spoon. That's humbling, wasn't it?
Right, right, yeah.
What's fascinating is that these are all different gifts that people have, but a lot of people who are involved in investigating the afterlife have trouble doing things like bending spoons or meditating. We're sort of dry researchers, I think, you and I, more than we are. Although you don't call yourself a researcher, you call yourself a reporter, which I understand. But still, to be digging around in these communications from the dead and putting them together and making sense of them, to me, is very important research. I want to make sure, Michael, that I mention your favorite book of mine. It's called The Articulate Dead, and it came out a few years back, but the copy I have in my hand has almost every page dog-eared, which very few of my books do I do that to. But this book, The Articulate Dead, on every page has something wonderful that I wanted to remember. So anybody who is interested in understanding the history of communication, real communication with the dead, real evidential communication, I strongly recommend this book. And, of course, Dead Men Talking, I recommend as well, because as I said at the start, the young men who died in the First World War, there was a flowering of communication going on then. As they say, the veil thinned during that time, and these young men gave some amazing evidential communications to their families. So that's something that I enjoyed very much reading when I was reading the raw material, and what you've done is to boil down a lot of stuff into a really short readable book, getting rid of the fluff, because as you say, at that time the writers were, I think, being paid by the pound, and they wrote much more than they needed to get the point across. What else should people look at, do you think? What else would you recommend that anyone who's interested in this field really maybe read or think about?
Well, there's just so much. In fact, I'm sitting in my spare bedroom that I call my library, and I've got about 500 books piled in front of me. And most of the books are I shouldn't say most of them, but the ones I'm on the shelves, the newer books are all in boxes or on the floor or something. But the older ones are all pre-1950. I just find them treasures and read those. But I would recommend any books by Professor James Hyslop, Hyslop, who was a professor of logic and philosophy at Columbia University. I'm looking at about five books of his on my shelf right now, and they're all very valuable part of my library. Camille Flammarion, who was a French astronomer, wrote four or five books on psychical research, and they're very, very valuable. I don't know where to stop. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yes. Yeah,
some of those old books.
You agree with me that the before 1950 communications and channeled works and automatic works received through automatic writing were just a treasure. And most people, certainly when I discovered them, most people had never heard of them. That wonderful probably began in the latter part of the 19th century and went through about 1950. Just a flowering of information.
Definitely. Geraldine Cummings is another one I neglected to mention. I have about seven books by Geraldine. I think I pronounced Hyslop's name. I used to pronounce it Hyslop, H-Y-S-L-O-P,
yes.
And then I learned a couple of years ago that it's pronounced Hyslop.
I mispronounce everybody's name because I pronounce it. That's, you can remember how to spell it if you pronounce it wrong. And if we're
right.
writing, that's
right.
that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so much fun. I've so much enjoyed talking with you. I always do. And again, Michael Tim, he is the preeminent expert on these communications received before 1950, which are so full of information about what the afterlife is, what it's like, how it works. And he's a meticulous reporter or researcher who has put together books that are very readable and have all this information in them, so you don't have to plow through all these dusty archives. My favorite is The Articulate Dead. His most recent one is Dead Men Talking, but anything that Michael Tim has written, you will find is just a treasure, because he writes easily too. I mean, we know people who write in a stuffy way. Michael writes in a very readable way. So please look those up. And thank you so much for being with me and sharing this time with me. We'll have to do this again. Meanwhile, this is Roberta Grimes, and this is Seek Reality. You are a powerful, eternal being. I keep saying this, but I understand very many people don't understand this is true. You are a powerful, eternal being. We know that for certain. You never began. You never will end. When you fully understand all the implications of that, it's going to change everything, everything in your life for the better. If you want to learn more about the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. And, of course, my own humble books, which include information, a lot of information I learned from Michael Tim, are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch. You can learn about my books and read my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest next week will be Maxine Meulier. Maxine is a Harvard graduate student, and her extraordinary book, Great Moments of Modern Mediumship, Volume 1, is a trove of amazing information about many, many mediums, including some of the best mediums from the first part of the 20th century. Like Michael, she is a genuine scholar. She is someone who has gone into the original work, dusty old books, and she's pulled out information to give you in very readable, easy form. I think you're going to really enjoy her, hearing her, and enjoy learning what she has to tell us. I'll never get her book. Volume 1, Michael, is about 2 inches thick. I cannot imagine I'll even get through it in time. But it's so exciting to see so many people now, young people, working in this field. I think it gives you and me, Michael, tremendous hope for the future. We've been speaking with a much-beloved scholar, Michael Tim. He's the Dean of Afterlife Researchers, and he's the foremost leading light in a field that is actually studied with brilliant people. There's room for you in it as well, though, and why don't you join us? There is no pursuit in this world more joyous than the discovery of ever more certain evidence that our minds are, in fact, eternal. Scientists, as I said last week, are basically still clueless, which is wonderful for you and me in that it gives us an opportunity to do the leading scholarship in this field and to be basically experts in what is going to become the foremost science of the day after tomorrow. We can do it today. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.